tax levy ordinance, which allows us the ability to collect taxes. That must be filed with the county clerk's office by the end of December. And then we really, as I tried to explain, we really don't know what the final extension will be until next July, which then we won't know until what the real tax increase will be until that time. But this is the side of the equation that allows us to collect the money to then approve the budget appropriation ordinance in March to then spend the money for the park district.
I would just comment to say thank you to Carol and her staff for again making something that on the surface appears complicated to be readily understood. Thank you.
I agree.
Anyone, any other comments? No? Okay. Otherwise, I will close the public hearing. Okay. All right. Next item is approval of Ordinance 876, levying the taxes for the 2017 tax year. I will entertain a motion to approve Ordinance Number 876, levying the taxes for the 2017 tax year as presented.
So moved.
Motion on that?
Yes.
Okay, any discussion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Underdonk?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and the next item is our financial report.
We're now 8 months into the financial fiscal year. Really, there's no surprises. It's been consistent pretty much in comparison to the last two previous fiscal years. We're up in Recreation Department programs, which is always a good thing to see. Daycare revenues are up. We had a slight downfall earlier in the fiscal year, but that's recouped. A little early to tell yet on what. Hopefully the weather will cooperate. It did, for the most part, with the beach this year. We did not make as much as we did last year, but I think last year was amazing with the weather. We did still pretty much close to that still, so I'm very happy with the report so far.
Okay.
Any questions?
Questions, issues, all concerns?
Right.
We're doing pretty good at this point. Okay, now, our partnership with Friends of the Green Bay Trail, the Village, and the Park District. Lisa will review this topic for our board discussion.
Great. Actually, I'm just going to introduce Betsy, and she could introduce her group here and explain our partnership, so if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you guys for making time on your agenda for us tonight. I'm here with Pam Avery, Diane Reading, and Lynn Donaldson, all members of trustees from our board. And I think all of you got some information in your packet about what we'd like to do. What we formerly called was called Shelton Park, but we thought that was kind of a misnomer and confusing. So now we call it kind of the trail south of South, or SoSo. So SoSo is our nickname. So there won't be any confusion. As I think most of you know, we have been working on the trail for about 8 years now. And we have completed this, not completed, but we've almost completed the section from Harbor to Scott. We are an exempt 501c3, and every year we have an annual fundraising event, which is just in October. And we have about 150 local residents that attended that support us. We have $100,000 in the bank, so we can pay for this plan that we're talking about. And I would like to hand out a timeline.
So good.
What?
So good.
I know, so good.
Just have some point of reference. Yeah. Okay, I think that one there for Lisa, too.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, so now what I'd like to do is, I'm sure we've probably got some questions, and I'd like, Cam's going to come up and talk a little bit about the cost and what we're asking for.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Last week, we had a meeting with representatives of the village and the park district to talk about what we wanted to do in this so-called so-so area. And it was very clear to us that we would not be able to undertake what we wanted to do there. First of all, I want to recognize that the land is owned by the park district and the village, and a small piece of it by the Intercity Railroad. But even though we've done a lot, we knew that we could not take on doing this so-so area unless we had real buy-in from both the park district and the village that would require various things of them to help us complete this. And I have to say, it was an extremely successful meeting. We were thrilled with the outcome, and we were particularly pleased that Lisa invited us to come tonight just to share with you what it is that we are talking about. In addition to the area that we pretty well restored between Harbor and Scott, we also have done restoration work on the swale that is immediately north of Harbor, sort of along where they dump all the snow, south of the community garden. And for that particular restoration and the stewardship of it for 3 years, we have a three-way agreement between the park district and the village and the Friends, where we all agree that we will pay a third of the cost for the stewardship for 3 years. And that cost is $715 per participant. That's a contract that we have with PISO, who I know Chris is familiar with, and we found that they'd be very good at stewardship. So now, with the so-so area, which is this area really from where the tennis courts are, and where the north end of the community garden up to south, there's a huge amount of buckthorn and other stuff there that needs to be restored. There's also a lot of good vegetation in there that we can keep, but it's going to require a lot of effort. It's going to require, and Chris has been wonderful about offering the expert services of the park district, tree cutters and people who know how to remove stuff and have it not come back, that will be very important. The village has agreed that it will remove the stuff that is cut down, and it will also water the new stuff that goes in. We have a plan that I think you all have been given, the landscape plan for that area. It's a rough plan in that it lays out where we think we would be doing the work, and it has these modules of different types of vegetation. The modules will not all be uniform modules that will be put in here identically, but it shows the type of vegetation needed depending on whether it's wet or dry or whatever. We think it's going to cost us about $100,000 to put in the trees and the shrubs and the plants. And we are prepared that we will pay for that, and as Betsy indicated, we have the money to do it. But there will be ongoing stewardship that will be required, presumably using a contractor to do it we're talking about 5 years once we have completed the installation. So we're hoping that we will get the bad stuff removed in 2018, we will put in the new stuff, so that the stewardship would really commence in 2019. And we are estimating what we have asked for and what the park district and the village have agreed to is to pay half of the cost of stewardship for those 5 years, but not to exceed $10,000 per participant in any 1 year. And we're estimating, our current estimate is that it's going to be less than $5,000 per entity for each of those years. It may be that as time goes by, it'll cost less because there's less stewardship to do. Prices may go up. We really don't know, so we've built in a little bit of cushion there. But that's what we're proposing to do. And if you have any questions, my colleagues would certainly be happy to answer them. I would too. We have Betsy and Diane know a lot more about all this horticultural stuff than I do.
Can you define stewardship?
Stewardship is the process. Well, I should have let one of these two go. I know. I could only guess at it. I don't know why I have to go out there all the time to pull weeds.
Stewardship is more about maintaining the native restoration landscape. So it's
I mean, I guess it's just, it's more of a restoration term rather than maintenance. You're not mowing a lawn and raking leaves. In this case, you're pulling little sprouts of non-native weeds, herbiciding where necessary. It's a little more active than just a landscape maintenance. And so stewardship, you know, you're encouraging the good things to grow and you're trying to suppress the bad things. So it takes specialized knowledge. It's not something that you can just hire any landscape contractor to do. You need somebody who's proficient in native plants. Does that help?
It does, and who does that?
There are firms that specialize in natural area.
Well, this firm that I mentioned, Piso,
they
are ecological and restoration landscapers. They do it all over the area, and you guys know some of the prominent places where they do it, but they're very well regarded. We have used them quite a bit for helping us with the area south of Harbor, as well as the swale area right now. But we're not tied to them other than for the 3-year contract we have for stewardship of the swale.
We're doing stewardship on the new bioswales out here for the next 3 years as part of our agreement. It's a pretty standard terminology or approach. I mean, it's a little bit different than pulling weeds in a formal garden. It's more of a broad scale, looking at, you know, percentages, and it's not the idea of pulling one dandelion out of a decorative bed. It's a little bit different approach.
I've actually seen the stewardship team leaders from Piso on the trail with a bunch of their employees, and they'll actually take the time and say, you know, see this, Lisa, this is this kind of plant, here's another one that looks similar that's good that you want to leave there. So they'll sort of do a refresher, and then they'll spread out and say, okay, you guys go now pull all the back
weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've used Piso in the past, the Park District has.
Any other questions? I just have to say this is a great example of community partnership. You know, a group of volunteers raising the funds to do this for the community on the Park District property and village property, and then also other volunteer efforts, obviously, in other parts of the trail. And then the Park District working to make sure that's maintained into the future. So this is and working with the village, because it's all of our land in there. It's kind of meshed up together. So we're thrilled with their efforts to want to revitalize this. If you've been in that area, it's a lot of buckthorn, a lot of, you know, it doesn't look very nice. So the steps after this is that we'll be including this in the budget for this year. We're going to have a community meeting on
December 13th,
just because anytime we do large buckthorn removal, some people, you know, because you're taking away their screenings, we want to explain what, you know, they're so good at explaining why we're doing this, what the advantages and what the benefits are. Maybe, you know, in 3 or 4 years and 5 years when it grows in. So we're going to have a community meeting, and the village will have the same kind of presentation. So any other thing?
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to add, this is a good alignment with one of our goals for the year, which is sustainability.
It is.
And it fits in very nicely with that, and we're glad you're able to help us.
Yeah.
we believe enormously in sustainability for the work that we're doing here, and one of the things we've been doing is building up an ongoing stewardship fund or endowment that can be used to help support on a long-term ongoing basis. Because otherwise, eventually, we would all just go back to what we see out there right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. You could stay, or you probably leave. I don't know why. It's kind of exciting. Yes.
I just would love to know who these people are.
Oh.
Except for Chris.
Oh. So Carol is our director of finance, and she's been here probably the longest of all of us. And so she controls all the money and makes sure we make good financial decisions. Bobby Collins is our director of recreation and facilities, so he oversees all of our facilities and programs and everything like that. And Erin is our marketing and communications director. So she's the one you'll see put our emails and posters and everything communicates for us in the district. So, and then Jenny makes sure that everybody stays in line. She's our administrative assistant, and we all know that means that she really runs the park district. Quietly.
Certainly tells behind me the what scenes. To do. Yeah.
Sign this, sign this.
So thank you for asking that question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, ready for the next item?
I am.
Okay. Well, Lisa's going to talk to us about our breakwater sculpture, and it's an evolving process. We'll get up to date.
So, like all of you, I thought this was a done deal last month. Yeah. And then it showed up in the Tribune, and the family that we've been searching for a year all of a sudden contacted me. So it's the original family that donated the sculpture. Boy, what year was that?
Many moons ago.
And it kind of told me the story behind it. It was donated in honor of their daughter who died of cancer. The father now lives in Arizona, but the sister is in the area. For the family. So I kind of got a little bit more background of what the sculpture was about and what there is, and I told him, you know, we sent letters to their foundation, it came back. So at that point he said, well, you know, is there any possibility of restoration? I said, well, the Park District really doesn't have the funds to fund this. And he goes, well, could you find out how much it would cost? So I talked to Dudley, and we decided to go back to Barry and ask Barry how much it costs, and sent the proposals in your board packet. I then went back to the original donor and said, this is how much it will cost to restore. And he said that he could donate up to $5,000 for the restoration effort. So that's when I went back and did a little bit back and forth negotiating. And the proposal that stands before you. So Barry met on-site with Chris. And Chris, can you give him a little bit of update what he said during that process?
We looked at the piece again, obviously, and what Barry recommended was coming in and welding all the joints that are currently bolted. So some joints are currently welded, they're in good shape. The joints that we were particularly concerned about are the ones that are bolted. They're bolted for more of artistic impression than they are for structural integrity. So he recommended welding those joints, resetting the south end of the structure on the existing footings. And there's a few areas where we had some rust holes that were originally weep holes, which were meant for water to drain through the structure. They filled up, they rusted out. He would weld those up as well. So it would be it wouldn't necessarily be something that he was going to take apart piece by piece and put back together. It would be welding pieces of metal onto the piece and fusing the existing mechanically fastened joints.
So then we approached Perderma and asked them, it told them about the meeting, told them what the artist was intending to do, asked if that would meet our requirements, and they said as long as the piece was restored back to its original integrity when it was donated, that would suffice them. And so Barry, and this is just his professional opinion, believes with these fixes will last another 40 years. So the sculpture's been there for 35, so we have no reason to believe that that's not the case. But, you know, that's just his professional estimate. We have nothing to do that. So there's no engineering costs on top of this. One thing he did say is that, you know, he thinks it's only going to take a week. But just like any construction project, he cannot say for sure until he gets in there. Just like when we do construction projects here, when you get on site, you find things or surprises. So he gave us estimate what it would cost if it goes past that week, the hourly fees. He will donate his time if anything goes past a week, so there will be no charge. He will waive his fee. He would only charge for his assistance and materials. And as if you recall, his actual price has gone down for that first week of work too. We negotiated that the last time around. So that is an unknown of what that expense is being. It could be nothing. It could be that they might have to work for a couple days. He broke it down to what his two men, our daily rate is. We find that a very acceptable rate. Right, Chris, according to your professional opinion. So really, at this point, it's really the board's call, what would they like to do with, from this point on.
And I'm not sure that it is. I appreciate that it came before the board's attention. We were discussing the possibility of having that statue removed. Historically, when we're looking at disposing of a unique asset or property, it does come before the board. But if we're talking now about, and the board had its conversation about the disposal and came up with an amount that we were comfortable in spending through deliberation and thought went into that. And now we're changing it. Now we're saying we're going to keep something we already have. So I think it's within your purview as executive director, should you decide that this is going to take more than what we had originally discussed, up to a certain limit, you have the discretionary ability to do that. What I would say, since this did come before us, is we agreed on whatever it was, $3,700 to take it apart. The original donating family is interested in spending up to $5,000, and the artist is saying that he's trying to be cost conscious with his time. Is the board interested in spending more than we discussed on this statue? I don't know how much interest I have. I appreciate the artist saying that he would not charge for more than his week's time, but there is an advantage to him to keep a work of his out in the public sphere. And I would say I'd be comfortable with spending 10% overage from what we previously had discussed to dismantle it, but I wouldn't be comfortable myself in spending more than that at our end. If it's important to the donor, perhaps he can go into his pocket. If he's not interested in doing that, and the artist wants to keep it out there, then I would leave it up to the artist. I wouldn't want to give them carte blanche. I understand they're saying they can do this in a week, et cetera, but who knows?
Mm-hmm. Steffi?
I agree with that statement. We already agreed on it. Rather than it being torn away, we already sent back a ton of money to put it into restore it. I think it's great. I don't really want to go above that.
Okay, Lisa?
Ben could be agreement with Steve and Stephanie, although I would hold it to the 3720 that we agreed on at the last meeting. I would not give another 10% to that. One thing that we understand is that when someone makes a donation now, we look to a fund for maintenance, preservation, restoration, etc. We did not do that. The powers that were in control at that time did not have that kind of foresight, which has left us with this situation now. So I don't think it's unreasonable to ask the donor to do what they are capable of doing in order to keep this in the public space. So I would say hold it at 3720, that's what we agreed to do. And we'll contribute that if and only if the work is completed.
Mm-hmm.
Not
I agree.
Like, okay, the week's over, we're leaving.
Yep.
You know? So we have to...
Had that letter signed off, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Josh?
I have a question.
Go for it.
Did anybody have any conversation with the sculptor about what the repairs are going to look like? And that, are they going to be the same color metal? Or
they're
going to
stand out. I mean, the structure already has arc welds on it, so it's something that's going to be different now. They're going to discolor with time. I mean, it's going to probably burn the areas that he welds. They're going to be a different color. It's going to discolor the steel. I mean, I would imagine that when it was originally put out there, it looked like that, and it's just turned brown over time.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be noticeable once it's repaired that work has been done to it. He's not going to paint those areas or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm not expecting that, but I guess, you know, if it's very weathered and then, you know, shiny stainless, and it's going to take 15 years to...
It'll be probably courting the same material, so it won't be something like copper that's never going to change colors or anything like that, but
yeah.
We'll, for a period of time, we're going to be able to determine that it's been repaired.
Yeah. Notwithstanding that, I guess I feel slightly different than the three commissioners that have spoken so far. Not only, I guess I said before, I don't think we should be in the business of removing artwork. I think this is a pretty substantial piece of artwork, and the incremental cost that we're talking about here is relatively minor. I believe if we remove it, there's some in-kind cost that I think might have been in Lisa's memo, if I recall reading.
Correct. That's true.
For the park districts to restore, so it's not like we were only going to pay $3,500 or whatever it was. We were also going to have some expense that we were going to incur on top of that. And presumably, if they fix it, we won't have that in-kind cost. I support the proposal that you have here in your memo, Lisa.
I'm trying to figure out. I think we have three separate proposals on the table right now.
Yep.
We have Lisa's memo.
I'm going either way.
Lisa's memo.
Just facts.
We have Lisa Brooks capping at what we had promised earlier. And then there's a third option where we would still do a cap, but it might be, what was that, 10%?
I was just throwing that out there because 10%. They're asking us to possibly fund any overages, and I would want them to know that there's a limit to those overages.
Yes.
You want to put a number on it? I was going, with an additional $370 to bring it up into the low $4,000 range. But I have another question that we need to discuss. The last time we talked about this, we thought we were going to be assisting in removing the sculpture for the artist to take possession of it again and do what he will. Do we have something in the master plan for that area that would be affected for future use in that continuous green space there by leaving the sculpture in place? Is that going to affect plans that we might want to put into play in the next 5 years? What we would do in that area would probably be fine going around the specific sculpture.
Right, we don't have any, we have plans to do something with the Old Green Bay, obviously develop a plan, but there's no, let's put a dog park in that area. Never considered that. Or, give me something else. A playground. A playground. Or
linear fitness.
Or whatever. Yes. So that's a possibility, but could that work around that sculpture properly?
So it probably could, so that we need to figure out if we want to keep it or get rid of it. If we want to keep it, how much you really would be willing to pay.
Exactly.
And it sounds like everybody here, for the most part, is amenable to providing some assistance to keeping it. We're not interested in just seeing it disappear.
Well, there's sentimental value to it, and that's the heart of the problem. If it wasn't a donor attached to it, and it wasn't, for the reason he donated it, I think it would be an easier decision.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emotion to it, and I think that's why it makes it hard to.
And it is our only public art, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's that sundial in Friends Park that's kind of art, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. But it's our only, it is only our only big piece, yes. So.
So we need value awards just because it's our only piece of public art.
Well, perhaps we can do more to promote it if we're going to continue to own it.
I just wanted to see us try to develop a mechanism to encourage the artist to control his costs.
Yes.
And not to think that he's dealing with a government entity and with someone that was of means to purchase this originally and now is going to assist with destroying it. I don't know who that individual or foundation was, but I know that we have a lot of requests on our funds and our resources. And I want to be sure that this isn't something I've ever really heard anybody in the community talk about in 30 years on here. So I don't know how high profile, emotional or otherwise, it is for the community. But it does have meaning to some people in the community, and I would like to try to be as sensitive as Stephanie to that. But I think we should give my opinion is that we should give the artist some inclination that our resources and intentions are limited.
He doesn't know that. He's come down in his fee actually to take out the sculpture originally and then again waived his fee. So he does know we don't have unlimited funds and that this is not a done deal. So I think he's been negotiating and has lowered his fees throughout the process. But he's still not willing, I guess, to give away it just because to restore it. He's still an artist and needs to make a living, I guess. So
and two prevailing wage welders and a foreman are going to cost you $6,000, $7,000 a week. That's
right.
Not an unreasonable, there's not an upcharge here for, you know, this being public art or the location. I mean,
right.
This is a reasonable fee for something of this nature.
Yeah.
So if we have three people saying, okay, fine, $3,720, I'm fine with the 10% over, can we just...
Yeah. So what I could do is that really nothing changes then, and we don't have to take action later because really it's the money that we're going to spend anyway, so we've already decided that. So what I could do is go back and say either we find other donors that could supplement that, go back to the original donor and say if there's anything over this amount, we would need that covered, but the only Parks District funds can be $3,720. And maybe we just wait till spring to take it down because we have a sign up there that says keep off to see if we can generate any other people. I know there's people on Facebook that were interested in. There's someone emailed me and said how much it would cost for us. I don't know. Maybe there's other people that have approached us, or I know there's a group that was trying to do a position that would help fund keep the sculpture. And maybe wait till spring to see if we can get that worked out and then go from there. But the board does not, does not want to spend over $3,720.
Although I would concede to a 10%.
Because, right.
Reasonable.
Josh is right. We would have to take out the footings. We would have had to replant the grass. So maybe go to like 4,000 and just no more than 4,000. Okay.
Okay. That's a good old round number.
That's a good old right number.
This isn't a voting item. This is a providing a
direction. We have
direction
an action item, but I think this is enough. This is where
we're
not spending any more funds. Yep, we
okay.
Just scratch it from later on, action items.
Okay.
So that gives me some great...
Okay. Thank you all. That was very thoughtful. Let's move on to...
Thank you for all the time you spent.
Staff reports.
Please call me more.
It's probably a much bigger project than you anticipated.
For both of us.
Everything. Okay. Thank you.
Named after me.
Staff reports.
Carol.
First.
Well, it's just busy time of the year, and calendar year, budget, capital, so I really don't have anything further to add than what's already in the report.
Nothing about time clock plus? No? Okay.
So it's a process.
All right.
We made a big hurdle. Jumped over a hurdle this last week.
Yeah.
So
we're trying to automate our time management. We didn't have time management software, and once we get that, it'll be very efficient. But it's been a very, very, very big setup process. But in the end, it's going to be very efficient and effective, and the staff is looking forward to that. So thanks, Carol.
Question about that. So if someone would call in, say, with an emergency and say that I needed somebody and you weren't quite sure whether they were here or not, you would at least know that they checked in the morning. So that in a way, that's also sort of a security and personnel management tool, as well as a bookkeeping tool on time.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So there's some, I call them secondary benefits for that. That's great. Okay. Anything else under business? No.
Did the brochure go out?
It went out yesterday, I think. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get it yet?
Today.
You probably get it probably tomorrow, right?
Today,
yeah. Today or tomorrow?
It's a busy week at the post office, so maybe tomorrow.
Hopefully that doesn't mean I'm behind on my holiday cards.
No, it came today. No, it came today.
It came today?
It means it went to the post office today, so you'll probably get it tomorrow or Friday.
Okay.
I have a preview of my office, you want to see it?
Okay.
All right.
Recreation and facilities.
Yeah, very exciting. On Monday, Adam Wall joins us to replace Paul. We're all extremely excited. Very talented recreational facility professional. He's going to hit the ground running with basically telling him to get that fitness center going, getting all of our personal training going, get up to speed with all of Paul. We're very happy with the pool of candidates. He really stood out above everybody else. He comes from Deerfield with a really vast recreational background and facility background. So we're very excited. Watts is ready to open on Friday. Chris's staff has done a phenomenal job, just really hit it out of the park. Gone above and beyond to make sure we've had that facility available all week for training all our new Zamboni drivers, getting staff up to date, dealing with all the leaves with the late fall. No mechanical issues so far, touch wood. And we are just hoping that the weather stays nice and cloudy and kind of 30 to 35 degrees, and we'll be fine for the winter.
Okay. I'm sure it's going to stay 30, 35 the whole winter.
Does Adam have any experience in ice rinks anywhere on his resume?
He doesn't, but I'll tell you, he ran two outdoor pools, and that is a very challenging operation to run. So hopefully he'll, like me, dive both feet in, get up to speed. He's already...
So he has plenty of experience with scheduling.
Facility management, he has plenty of experience. Yeah.
He's already been training on the Zamboni, and Matt, who just went to the Blackhawks with their new Zamboni driver for their facility, says he's as good, if not better, than me at driving when I started. So I'm confident that...
That's not saying much, don't you?
I'm very confident he'll be able to fill the boots pretty easily and quickly.
Well, that's a perk, isn't it?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
Zamboni driving.
A lot of people. There was a lot of people for that job. Okay. Yeah.
Are we getting some sort of stipend from the Blackhawks having developed and trained three of their staff now?
Anyways,
it's a point of pride, Steve.
Point of pride. Point of pride.
Yeah.
The Blackhawks are still in our staff. So that's a point of pride, without a doubt.
Okay. I think board members.
Anything else?
I'm going to talk to Rocky about this the next time you see him. Not the tickets, just the
pipe. All right.
Okay, shall we move on to parks and maintenance?
Sure.
Well, it's, as Bobby said, it's a fun time of year, getting the ice rink open, really preparing for winter. Just been really wrapping things up throughout the park system, winterizing things, getting everything ready to go for the cold season, wrapping up down at the beach, athletic fields, and such. Lise, do you want to talk about construction projects now or later on?
Do you want to do construction now or later? Sure, now.
Me now.
Since you suggested.
Okay, so probably some exciting stuff's going on this week. So we have carpet in our fitness center. So we're getting ready to move into the next phase of that project with equipment scheduled to be delivered in early December. So project is moving along smoothly. Bathrooms are coming together. It definitely has a very different feeling in there, the space. I think it feels a lot bigger with the mirrors on the wall, but
it is very
different feeling than
a
performing arts space.
And modern in there. So
yes.
When you leave, just check out the carpeting and stuff like that. But
so,
the curings, but it's looking really nice.
In addition, things are moving along with the parking lot projects. We are preparing to have asphalt installed on the east parking lot here. Within the next week or so. So that will be we'll be able to activate, I believe it's 38 parking spaces once that phase of the project is complete. We are working on the back Parks Drive right now. In that process, we did have a little bit of a challenge last week. We uncovered an underground storage tank that was previously used to either hold heating oil or gasoline. We really don't know right now. So that has added a little bit of a complication, but we're working through it. We have some mandatory state reporting expectations that we have to execute. We're working with Poderma to bring in firms that are an expert in this particular area to really give us direction moving forward on how we want to handle that particular amenity and what that's going to look like to get that all taken care of satisfactorily for us and for the state laws. So. It shouldn't drastically delay anything that we're seeing with the project right now. Right now we're more fighting weather than anything, but everything is moving ahead back there. So. The east parking lot, so it would be the turnaround and that parking lot where the skate park used to be.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So within a week or so.
Yeah. You used to see asphalt by next week in that area.
And then where was the tank then?
In front of the parks building. So the first building in the yard here. The garage. It looks, based on some discussions I've had with former staff, we believe that it was out of service before 1974, so it's been back there for quite a while.
It's, you know, when as with some of our other change orders, those things happen when you're dealing with an established old site that we are dealing with now. So Chris is doing a great job executing this whole project, staying on top of the construction on site, both outside and inside. So it's moving on.
So that was probably left over from when this was a school site, or even before that?
The back was always owned and operated by the park district, so I would imagine it's, I mean, we know it's been out of service for at least 40 years, so.
And it could have been way before that.
I mean, in my discussions with Rick Bold, it was out of service when he was unaware of it when he started in 78, so.
It's way back.
Find a cemetery or something.
You got it. There's a positive thinker. That's exactly what
I
said.
That's exactly what he came in. He's like, well, I'm going to tell you, we didn't find a cemetery. I'm like, all right. So
it's an archaeological
site. Exactly.
That's a great point. Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that perspective for everybody.
We have had a couple of just very run-of-the-mill change orders, things like electric lines that needed to be relocated, some thick and concrete. We were challenged a little bit back in the skate park area. It appears that when the skate park was developed, stone and asphalt were paved directly over tree stumps and organic material. So while it really didn't directly impact the skate park, it wasn't the best material to use as a foundation for your parking lot. So we ended up incurring some additional costs to have that material excavated out. Most of it actually has remained on site. We used it, we filled in the wooded area there, so we saved on the trucking costs there. The actual area that was excavated out was filled with recycled concrete, which is like a broken up product. So all in all, it's gonna be a great, strong foundation for our parking lot, and we should have many years to come with that, so.
Not to mention, we provided great entertainment for our ELC and Children's Circle and GJK kids for 3 months, and they've been having a day. Love it.
I almost want to just have another skate park.
Really? We should just keep on just doing construction out there. They love it.
They love
the hard hats.
They took a lot because they were told they couldn't, and I heard about it.
Yeah, there was 3 or 4 days where we actually had to take the fence down on the playground just based on way things were getting moved around, so it was heartbreaking, I will tell you, for my son as well.
They're sad.
When I drop him off in the morning, we have a lot of pointing towards the equipment and all that stuff. So it's but on the upside, we did get some repairs done to that fence and have something that's in much better shape than what was out there before. So.
Yeah. They actually had the kids were all on the fence holding on like a comfortable chain gang. They actually had to move them back.
Well, the construction workers are loving it.
They're loving it.
You know, they're out there driving and honking and waving. And, you know,
that's been the plus part of the project. So, so we're moving right along, and we'll keep you up to date on.
One more thing, it's not our project, but the village, I guess, is doing some work on the beach. Is that right?
Correct. They're pretty much done
They're wrapping it up. So.
Yeah.
They were relocating the water main to an area that was going to be better for all parties involved. So
yeah, I think they know
that did include the removal of some of the decking and things like that, but it's all stuff that we've worked through with them.
Yeah. So we'll have to do some refurbishing of our lockers and things like that at the end of the season. So spring will be a busy time for our guys because they'll be fixing that with the assistance of the village, but we'll be working on that. But it's getting there. So.
Great. Okay.
All right.
Next is marketing and
business. Question. Erin, did I read that the fitness center is going to be open on the 27th?
Yeah, I'll talk about that in my.
Okay.
If that's what.
All right. Yeah.
I'll give you the whole fitness update.
Where did I put the 27th?
I'll tell you exactly. Yeah, I just.
I just the news is the brochure moved to the post office today, so that's huge. We do have a special event tomorrow. So that's worth mentioning from 4 to 6.
You do.
Live music, pony rides,
ace painting, hay mazes,
etc. Was there a size limit on pony
ride? Carol's like, no, I'm going to be honest.
Steve, I could bring a 50-gallon drum for you to sit on.
So I hope you all can join us for the start of the season.
When the time is?
4 to 6.
4 to 6.
Flashlight treasure hunt at 5:45.
Yeah. Being glow and lighting up the gazebo, so it's kind of a fun day. So,
great. Is there anything else under marketing and communication?
No,
you're very busy with your I appreciate your reports every month, and very busy with the alcohol and the posters for the different events.
Yeah. We have a lot of events.
There's only so much clip art you can use.
No, she's really good at that.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the wayfinding. She didn't talk about this, but
yeah,
I could brag. All the wayfinding site in this building, she spearheaded and really put a lot of thought on it. So when you look like down the hall now, you see which room is 1, 2, 3. It may seem like little things, but it's all... What?
We're not done. We're still...
And we're not done.
Not
yeah.
Done.
So she's done a phenomenal amount of work with color coding arrows and the fitness signs on the front door and
construction signs.
Construction
she
signs.
She makes all the construction signs, which...
The banners.
Let me tell you, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. But just to get people to, you know, she'll be doing extensive work on getting people to know about the fitness area also. There'll be postcards going out, and she has a whole marketing campaign for that. So
which we are going to start after Thanksgiving.
Yep. We are keeping her very busy.
Right?
Okay.
Thank you.
Safety and wellness.
Safety and wellness, just that, you know, we're staying safe. The committee keeps on meeting. There's nothing out of the ordinary. We're going to be doing some more safety training with staff as far as lifting and things like that throughout the course of the year, but everything seems to be going well.
We changed the name.
And we changed our name from not only safety, but safety and wellness committee.
Yes. Okay.
So because in that committee, we haven't just focused on safety. We also have been talking about a lot of wellness, internal and external, for the community. So I figured that was a better name for that. So
now,
we'll be passing a policy later on that.
I think I read that the staff's getting trained with the AEDs.
We actually always have, but we continue. All staff are trained on AEDs and first aid. CPR.
Where's the closest one from here?
Right down here. Right down here, and then behind the front desk.
Okay.
And yes, staff knows where those are, and we are all...
Good. Hopefully I won't need it.
Yes, we hope so too.
Okay.
Okay,
so now it's time for your report.
Yeah, so I just like to echo, you know, Bobby and Chris, actually Chris's whole team and Bobby's whole team has been working very hard to get Watts open with the staffing challenges we have right now. So really Chris's team got the rink up and running and has been taking a lot of the duties of Zamboni driving and training as we get all of our staff up to speed. So rink is, we laid ice a little earlier this year, which was great, just in anticipation after our fixing of the rink and everything. The one issue we're having is that leaves are falling so late this year, and when they fall on the rink and then it rains and then they get stuck in there. So they've been working even harder on that. So it's just been quite the challenge for them. You wouldn't think that would be an issue, but it is. But if you have a chance, go by Watts, especially on Friday, where we have Black Ice Friday, our opening day. It's all day, but 6 to 8 is the event there. And the facility looks great. The Bill and his team, Anthony, really done a lot there to spruce it up, and new flooring was laid and things like that. So we're excited for that, and we'll keep on that going. Glencoe Fitness, even though we're without that manager right now, we have not skipped a beat. We're working as a team, and I've opened the fitness center a couple of them before, so we're moving right along, but that will be Adam's biggest focus when he gets on board, is continuing that. So we plan to have the equipment delivered in December 14th, get staff trained, and we'll be doing preview dates at the center. So on December 16th from 11 to 2, we'll open it up. People can come, check it out. They can work out if they want. Showers probably won't be open that day, but they can test out the equipment. We feel when they see the center, that's when we'll get a lot of people interested in joining. Again, on Monday, December 18th, all day from 9 to 7, we'll do that also, and then on December 27th from 9 to 7. So we'll have staff on hand giving tours, answering questions, you know, whatever you want to do. And if you have a group, say you have a group of friends that want to come and check it out away from those dates, just give us a call. We'll set up a tour and we'll walk you through it. So let's try to get people get excited about that. And then we're going to have an opening celebration on Saturday, December 30th, which we'll have, you know, goodies. We'll again open it up. The first 100 individuals that sign up for a membership will get a t-shirt, and we have a special tagline on those t-shirts. So I know you all want to join to make sure you get that. And then starting Tuesday, January 2nd, we'll be up for full operations for our normal times, which is Monday through Friday from 5:30 to 9. And then Saturday and Sunday from 7 to 5, right? Yes. The times?
Yeah.
So it'll be 5:30 to 9. I believe it's in your brochure, too, that we handed out Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday and Sundays, it'll be open from 7 to 5.
And there will be child care.
And Monday through Friday, there will be child care from 9 to noon.
To 11:30.
9 to noon.
And how we're breaking that is that you'll sign up, or we're developing a system right now where they'll be able to sign up online for two time slots. I think it's 9 to 10:30 and then 10:30 to 12, so that we know either you can reserve a spot 24 hours in advance for either of those two time slots.
Is that free, or do you pay?
No, you have to pay for that. So it's either $9 a time slot, or yeah, no.
Nice.
The deal is with that babysitting child care is that it is strictly child care. It's not an enrichment program. It's we'll watch your child when you go to work out. And as long as you're in the building, you cannot leave the building to utilize that service. But you can say go to a teacher's conference, and as long as you're in the building, or a fitness class, or a ceramics class, or whatever, we'll have that opportunity for you during that time. So I think it's $9 an hour, or hour and a half, or 10 punch pass for $60, right? Yeah, that's quite the deal. I'm working on our personal trainers right now. We'll have that package all rolled out by the time we do the tours. So we're excited about that. So,
and members get a discount on group classes.
And 20% discount on group classes. So we're very excited about that and look forward to it. We have members already joining from all age groups right now. So seniors, a 16-year-old joined yesterday, and so we're excited about that. So you can join 14 and up, the ages for that.
Because we were going to do this deck December 3 and obviously we're opening later, are we replacing that with something?
Yes, so you'll get next year's.
Next January.
January free.
January 20.
So you get a month free.
Yeah.
So next year, 2018, you'll get free.
Okay.
So you pay for
good question.
Months, but get 13.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. So other than that, I think that's it. We introduced them. I hope you're all having your calendar, our staff appreciation party on December 15th at Deerfield Country Club. You should all have an e-bite on that. I'm excited. And again, if you would like to go to conference, I know we have Dudley going on Friday, possibly Saturday, so he's registered. If anybody else would like to go conference, just let me know, and we'll get you registered. When's the early bird deadline?
December 4th.
December 4th is the deadline on that one. So, and the conference is the 18th through the 20th, so it's, I think it's 19th and 20th is the Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday.
Yep.
Is the 4th open all those days?
Yes, on Friday. Is it open Saturday also?
No.
No, just Friday. It's not open Saturday
anymore.
Thursday and Friday it's open, so.
I did have one question.
Please.
Jumping back over towards Watts, is there going to be any concessions?
Good question. I'm going to throw it to Bobby because we had long discussions about this.
Yeah, so over the last number of years, we've got multiple vendors in there, and none of them have been able to make it worth their while. We've also noticed that a lot of people don't spend the full day at Watts, so they come and go, you know, stay for an hour, go for skating for a party, they'll do a public skate for an hour and a half, they tend to bring their own food. We did a cost-benefit analysis. We thought it was going to cost us a lot of money to actually run a concession operation, get it up and running if we're running it in-house, and we just couldn't justify this year setting up a concession stand, given that we have the new Keurig machine that people can bring their own pods.
Or we're selling the pods, too.
And we're selling them behind the front desk. And we also have vending machines that are selling candy bars and potato chips and Gatorade, which is really what people are looking for at Watts. So we made the decision not to offer concessions.
We find that we don't do a lot of tournaments, so that's when people really want a meal. But people can bring food in if they want, and as long as we have coffee and hot chocolate.
Yeah, hot chocolate, as you know, Steve, is the big thing.
Is the big thing. So we've tried two different vendors now, actually three since I've been here, and none of them panned out, a different one each year. They don't still make any money.
And it doesn't behoove us to have high school kids in there during weekend public skates selling hot chocolate and popcorn and nachos. I mean, those are the three things that always sold when the park district operated themselves.
Honestly, last year we had the operator and the hot chocolate. He couldn't sell it because the Keurigs were so popular. People much prefer the Keurig hot chocolate than they did his homemade.
So his own page was way too fancy, and there's nothing a kid would ever order twice.
Right. Well, cost-wise, it's way cheaper. Keurig, you know, it costs them $1 for a Keurig, and they can bring their own from home versus the $3 you're going to pay at a concession. The setup costs are pretty high for an operation that you're only running for 4 hours on Saturday and Sunday. So 8 hours a week, it'd probably be a $2,000 or $3,000 initial setup fee just to make probably $800 to $1,000, and that doesn't include your labor costs. So okay. It's for a seasonal facility. We all know concessions are a challenge.
Okay. Is there an opportunity for I call it a taco truck to come in for a special event?
Well, for special events, we have we do popcorn, we do cotton candy for our special events.
Okay.
And so that's never an issue, and we'll continue to do that. Like Watts Below Zero, we'll have cotton candy, we'll have popcorn, we'll do all that like we usually do. Mm-hmm. But for having a food truck come out on weekends, they would not.
It wouldn't make sense.
They would not make enough money to make it worth their while.
I think if there is some tournament or something.
We don't have a lot of those, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Are we ready to move
any
on?
Any other questions?
Any questions, concerns? Okay. So we're ready to move on to action items.
Mm-hmm.
First one relates to wellness. I entertain a motion to approve the wellness policy as presented.
So
second.
Discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anything you want to talk to us about the wellness?
Oh, nope.
Okay.
You did all in favor already, so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I thought maybe you wanted to embellish it.
Nope.
No. Okay. Moving right along. Okay. Okay.
Housekeeping, really, is what that one is.
You would like to have the motion and then do your presentation?
No, actually, if you could just ask us to do an update to refresh your memory, we would love to.
Yeah, before we vote on something, it's been suggested that we kind of do an update as to what's going on with Phase D?
Phase D.
Of the taco.
Taco truck.
Of the
way we should do this.
Not the big confusion of taco.
Is that, did I get a little pointer?
Yes, you do.
All right, we just want to refresh your memory because this is a large ticket item, and I know we've talked about it. Here it comes.
Light. Yes, no.
Because we can't see anything.
Nope.
She's getting them. She's all on top of that.
Oh, she has got it.
Okay.
Jenny.
Just a review. So in September 19th board meeting, we approved the master plan capital projects, and ticket parking lot phase D was on that. In addition, we talked about capital projects at the June 6th meeting, July 10th, and then September 5th. Talked about that. This being added to the capital projects. The plan including executing phase D of the Take-It Center parking master plan was then presented May 16th at the special project meeting. So this has been reviewed about 4 times. Did I hit this one right here? Okay, so this is the, can I hit this one?
Uh-huh.
Cool. I'm not very good with technology, look at that. So this is the original plan that was presented May 16, 2017 about the whole Take-It Center master plan. So the goal of Phase D parking improvements, if you recall, a big one was site walkability. It was to add a sidewalk on the south side of the lot so that the walkers and bikers can access the main entrance without walking, biking through the parking lot. Right now, there is no sidewalk that leads down all the way into the front entrance. They have to walk behind cars to get to the area, which is very dangerous, and especially during high traffic times, there's not even area really to walk safely on there. So that was one of our biggest goals to adding this on. Bike parking, we want to increase the dedicated space for bike parking. As you know, right now we have a few bike parking, it's not really a lot, so we wanted to actually dedicate spaces So take out car spaces and actually put in bike parking areas that people can safely like lock their bikes off and access the building. ADA parking lot improvements as required by our ADA transition plan. This was identified that the sloping in our parking lot did not meet those ADA requirements, and that is not just for people in wheelchairs. That would be anybody from someone with a walker, someone with sight disabilities, canes, things like that. We have to improve those. And then drop-off flow and congestion relief. By changing the lot layout, they suggested the Altamanu and the engineers that we shrink the bioswale on one side, and I'll show you a picture in a second, and then the plaza, so the front plaza that kind of goes out into the road, and the light bollards that are there that cause problems, and we'll explain that in a second too. And a dedicated drop-off pickup lane. Right now, the drop-off pickup lane where people stage to park like you find at schools inhibits the cars from going around them safely to access into the parking lot. And then also improve our wayfinding, so encouraging people to come in, either walking or biking, and then where to park in the lots. And we hope this will allow for other cars to proceed throughout the parking lot so they don't get bottlenecked right now right in front of the building where we see about 5:30 every day. This is happening. So this is the site right now. As you recall, we have the Green Bay lot here, and then we have this is coming into the thing. This is where we're fixing right now. This is the first phase we're doing right here. And so the work we were doing concentrating is right here this year. Right now, this is just an example of what happens a lot of times at between 5 and 5:30 every day. This is a congested area where they pull in, they park, they get out of the cars. Notice how far this car is away from this area. All these, they are doing that on purpose because of these light bollards. They can't get too close because they'll slam into them, their car doors will hit them. So our plan is to maybe look at removing these and putting other things in these place that will be a safety barrier, but these tend to...
The light bollards are also very challenging for snow removal as well.
And they get hit. We actually, since I've been here, this is like the third set of bollards we put in. They're not effective at all. Well, it looks like there's enough room. If you can see, when people are walking, they really can't get down here safely. And if we have buses or cars here, it's hard for cars to navigate through here, this area. So this is the area we're talking about minimizing, and then up here, talking about scaling back that area. It's a large area in front. Here's another example. There's no way to walk down here. This is the area that we're looking at making dedicated bike parking in this area, and you can see we have some backup occurring here. This example of the bus, so you don't always think of cars, but we have our bus, NSSRA bus here, so this is very challenging to get around during high.
Lisa, this is a good demonstration here of the condition of the existing asphalt.
Thank you.
So since 2008, we really haven't done a whole lot of asphalt maintenance to this particular parking lot, so as covered in Phase D, we have what's called a mill where they take the top layer of asphalt off and overlay over that. So right now our lot is in the position where we're moving beyond just seal coating as regular maintenance, so that's also included in the scope of Phase D as well.
So it's never been seal coated since we put it in, so thank you, Chris.
Yes, thank you. That's a perfect example.
Yeah, it's a perfect example right there. It's our engineer right there. So this is the area that we're talking about improving. As you can see, this would be, I don't know if you can read that, it's a cutoff curb. So this would be what they're saying would be the dedicated parking area. So parents could come and just wait for their children, which they do. And then this would be a bigger driveway by refinishing this. And Chris, jump in. You're much better at this.
So
this is
like
an existing bioswale right here. This would be gone.
They're referring to that as like the hammerhead bioswale. So by removing that, they're actually reorganizing the parking spaces to ensure that we don't feel a heavy pain of losing those spaces where we're going to put those dedicated bike racks. So we've also picked up some additional queuing spots for folks who are waiting to get to the front door. There's four or five spots there now that when you're parked there, you're almost blocking traffic with the folks that are parked diagonally. So really the intent is to open this up so people can queue for drop-off and also navigate around them So that's helping to alleviate some of the congestion that leads out onto Green Bay Road.
Yeah, so example right now, cars are parked here, so they can't really park. This would be where the bike racks would go, and this sidewalk would then connect to this sidewalk to get people safely to this building. So we'll put bike racks here, and then we'll also have more bike racks closer to the building. So we're hoping that would increase the bike traffic.
So, I'm sorry, I can't read that. What does that say? W off for parking?
What does it say? Eight inch off.
It's probably 6 foot width off curb parking is what it says. Or 6 or 8 foot width. They're talking about the drop off lane.
Right.
So this.
It's not really a parking lane.
It's more of a staging.
Yes.
Yeah.
Staging.
So they would have to stay in their car. But this is what happens now. They stay in the car waiting for their kids to come out.
So this also entails shrinking the existing plaza and replacing all the broken and damaged concrete. Probably we'll look at whether those bollards are necessary all the way down. Some of the bike racks that are really poorly placed on the area there that, you know, you get bikes parked where they're sticking out into the parking lot and all different types of crazy things that go on there. So, in addition, you can see Ultima New has added a couple of trees to the plaza area. That's kind of more just of a concept that we have a pin in, how we're going to structure the front of that building. We do need some material to block the front entrance from vehicles, so there is some security to that, but we really don't have an exact plan for that. That's something that we would be coming back to the board for a little bit of input on.
Yeah, this is totally conceptual, so that when they go, if approved tonight, they'd go out to design and we'd give them a little more feedback. They'd come with a couple options when they do the final design to get input from the board to see, you know, different ideas that they have here. But Chris is right, this is a safety issue also, so that, you know, you want something to stop people from just driving right through the lobby area. The slope will be changed so that allow for...
So currently, at least if you move the clicker up to the north end there, all of that whole area is improperly sloped, which causes issues with water draining. It also is not ADA compliant, which is something that's been identified in our transition plan at needing to be corrected. So the way the parking lot is laid out now, we're not really getting any real bang out of our bioswale in the sense that we're managing stormwater or anything like that. It's really just kind of in the way for car traffic, and you can see everyone cuts through it. I mean,
yeah.
Very few people actually walk around the outside of it. You see folks jumping over the stones and stepping on the grates, and it's really just not configured. It does not lead itself well into getting into this facility. So.
That's a good idea, but it doesn't work in this application. So we hope that this will help, you know, get traffic flowing. If they are queuing here, we can now get people around here, get them into the parking spots, go back here, and things like that. We did discuss, and actually this is Commissioner Brooks' idea, about possibly adding a third lane going in here so that we would have another lane that would come in here. So that we'd have two lanes in, so that one would be dedicated to queuing. So if it backs out to Green Bay Road, which I have to say sometimes does, that we could also have another lane. And so if they're all stuck in here, we're still able to get through people through. That's an idea we could definitely still explore. It looks like it would bring us pretty close to this building, to the Take-It Center. We don't know what's under there, to be honest with you, and this is what we discussed a while ago when this idea came up. We don't know if there's electrical
utilities
under here.
Cemetery.
We do know there's a retaining wall, so what we would have to excavate, we'd have to put a new retaining wall, we'd have to move any utilities around. It would be pretty close to the building because not only would it do the roadway, we'd also have the sidewalk there. So that's something that we could definitely explore, whether you wanted us to go back and explore it now or want to see if this new configuration solves our problem. This would looks to, we're just totally guessing, could cost up to like $300,000 to do that lane. We really can't move this way at all because of the property line and the trees blocking us from this neighbor right here. Yeah.
I would say before you discuss having two inbound lanes, you decide how much staff needs additional entertainment. Having worked the pickup line for years at West School, and also living across from Central School where the parents have created their own two-line pickups, you should not consider doing this with the age of the children that we have coming into this
building. That's good insight.
Unless you're going to have staff out there in yellow vests for public safety.
Yeah.
Whenever you get to the point at that time of day, at 5 to 5:30 or something, where you would have need of the two lanes inbound, it has to be managed. People can't be relied on to figure it out or to comply with the intention of going into a pickup lane versus the drive-through.
That's good. That's really good points. And we think that probably this will help solve that problem. As long as people can get around, they won't back up. People are too impatient, so they'll come here and they'll go around and
just
hopefully park. And that's a big problem. Along with this, so that's just an example. Along with this, I've also had preliminary discussions with the village about the possibility to do a traffic light to make our site more walkable. Right now, we do have a crossing guard in the morning for preschool, but the rest of the day we don't. So I said, we're just starting these discussions, exploring it, see what we can do. It would be more for, like, they hit the pad, it goes red so they can get across safely. If we ever want to look at a traffic light to help with traffic in this area, that's even a bigger, expensive proposition, because we would only be able to have one traffic light, so we'd have to merge those two driveways, which means the driveway would have to come in front of takeoff, so right out here we'd have a road in front, and then they would have to configure the whole intersection. So it's not as simple as, like, let's throw two stoplights out. They cannot have two stoplights that close together. We would have to configure into one drive.
They are not going to do that. That's right in the middle of an S intersection. You've got a curve coming from the north,
exactly,
from the south, and Vernon is right in the middle of it. That would be.
So that's something, but in the anytime I go, one of our biggest things is we want to try to make take a more walkable, biker friendly. We feel that probably people would take up on that option if they had a safe way to do that, not just in the morning, but with it throughout the day. And that we had more bike racks. So in the meantime, we're going to put more bike racks up front, but just having this whole feasibility is something that we would like to look at. So that kind of refreshes your memory. What we're asking today is,
while we have a break, I'd like to remind our liaisons to their traffic committee, was it walking and biking committee, that this could be very well something you'd want to discuss with them on the agenda. The access is very important, and there's this whole thing about safe routes to schools, but we also need a safe route to parks.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. And hope that you'll mention this.
It already came up. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay.
And you were, he didn't actually mention that, and it's good because you brought it up.
Okay, we're good.
That's really good. So what we're asking today is that you've all seen the concept drawings that they presented with the master plan, and those are just concepts. So we're ready to move into the next phase, which is to have them develop our design and construction documents to move forward. Do you have anything?
So after we would design, we would have to kind of formalize what we want to do in the plaza as far as repairing the existing concrete, the bollards, that type of thing. We would then come back to the board for approval to go out to bid. At that point, we would have concrete cost estimates versus the conceptual that we had in the master plan a year ago. So we would give you guys the opportunity to comment on it and, you know, make any changes as necessary.
Questions?
I would hope we would consider security bollards blocking the doors there or the glass windows there.
Right, and doesn't have to necessarily be bollards. So, for example, in this conceptual design, as you can see, I think they had trees and
maybe a concrete
seating wall. You know, that was pretty high end. So, but there's going to be something. So they'll present us with a couple ideas. I've seen it where it's just big concrete planters.
Yeah.
I've seen that. So we'll instruct them to give a, you know, different looks. So, because obviously this is our main building, we want it to look nice, but want to keep
probably
it in check.
Probably won't be the steel pipes painted yellow.
Yes.
With concrete, but...
And it doesn't necessarily have to be the bollards that just, you know, the light bollards, so, which we have experienced that it's a problem with cars. I would never have thought that, so I saw it. That's why they park. He actually had told me, he's like, well, they park so far out because they're hitting their door. I'm like, well, that makes absolute sense.
Well, the light bollards currently offer us no impact resistance. I mean, you could roundhouse kick them right over. There's not any... And they do.
They do.
It's a constant inventory item for us that they have to get regularly replaced just because of the abuse.
We've changed them three times.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Other questions?
So, the diagonal spaces for the bike racks are mine. I believe there's four spaces there right now.
I think it's three. Yeah, three or four.
Yes.
Three or four bike spaces.
No, three car spaces.
So we will be giving up those three or four for the bike parking, but also to allow for this car and this drop-off. So we're kind of losing those for a couple reasons. Bike parking, sidewalk, and to allow for this drop-off curve.
There's still a place for the dumpsters?
Yeah. So they're
right here?
You'll walk in front of that.
Yeah. And we hope to make those look a little nicer. Those have bugged me forever, that's the thing you see is our trash can. So we're hoping in the design, actually in the design concept that has it, is some kind of fencing so that we...
Just a gate?
A gate or something that makes it look a little more attractive.
Why aren't they at the south end of the east parking lot?
Well, I think they're here because right here is an emergency door. So you can't... you're right.
I just see the maintenance guys walking trash out of the main doors.
No, this is, I'm sorry, you're right. This is a door, a service door for our maintenance.
Also, we take our deliveries there.
Yeah, so you take deliveries and everything. So you can't make these parking spots anyways because that's where they take delivery. Yeah, you're right. They don't take garbage out of this door.
No, they take it right out the front.
They took it right out the front.
This is
many steps down to get to this
based
one.
Based on the garbage truck not being able to make it through the parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so having even just getting the garbage out can really be a difficult process if the parking lot is full. So we even utilize that space at times when we have a fleet vehicle that's coming or going, dropping stuff off. So it's kind of a loading zone per se for equipment getting unloaded or loaded. So, but with our those bike parking spaces, we've also reordered the parking spaces in the center of the lot. So I believe the
lost one spot.
One to two. Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, after we reconfigure these, we only lose one spot after taking those out. So.
Just a quick idea. I know that hopefully people with those bike carts that they have their little ones in will start biking.
Yeah.
Dropping their kids off. But those take up a lot of space, so just sort of keep it in mind. A regular bike rack that just has enough space, because I've come to bike racks where someone's parking lot lengthwise along there, and nobody else can get their bike back.
I was just at, I don't know where it was, I don't know if it was at the Transport or Tudor Court, they were talking about bike racks and the kind of bike racks. There's a whole study done on the type of bike racks people actually use. So we'll actually, we'll make a note of that.
Squeeze for space, but that is a consideration, especially in this.
In this applicant, that's a really good point.
We've actually specified rings. If you've ever seen the ones that are like the wave, that's the one that people put their bike sideways against.
Yeah.
The rings are, I think, a little bit trickier to lock your bike sideways against. I mean, for me, seeing when they're locked to the trees is what kills me. I'm like, let's give them a bike rack. So, I mean, we've included the rings on Take It Field and on the front as well. So, I mean, the spacing between the racks is something we can easily adjust. We could have a couple of, like, buggy spaces. Wouldn't be unreasonable.
But that's a great. We'll make a note of that.
Yeah.
That's a great idea because that's what they'll be doing. Yeah, that's what we hope. It's right to advocate to get them to bike and walk here. Any other questions?
Okay. Anything else, Lisa?
Well, we've said this before. There's no guarantee that cars are going to still stick along that way and not get out of the car and not just park the car and get out and not use it as a pickup. I mean, without a car there, like there is in the morning, you know, it's just...
Well, we don't have a guard on this side at all. We have a walking...
Right. But we do in front.
Oh, in front, yeah. We don't.
So, that's just something I would throw out there, that that's a big concern. And we talked about that on the board before, you know, that this is a huge expense, and you know, we want to increase the flow of the traffic back there.
Could be a volunteer job for retired commissioners.
There you go. Because $15 an hour to have someone.
We can properly sign it and enforce no parking.
Yeah, we ticketed.
Because we're not enforcing no parking there now because we have no parking.
We ticketed yesterday. Actually, last week we ticketed someone because they actually parked here and then someone parked right there so no one else could get through. So we called public safety and ticketed both of those cars because they got out of the car and it was.
But was there parking?
There was.
I parked there, but there was no parking.
No.
There was
a spots open down here, so they just got out. They double parked too.
Lisa, I think it's important to remember that we're approaching this plan with 63 additional parking spaces over what we have right now, which is what we have in the east lot and in the back. I mean, so that's how many more spaces are going to always be open because of that versus where we're at now.
I will say, Lisa, the number of times we ask you to review this is reflective of the angst that we have. But every time you explain about it, I say, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense.
It's not, well, like what I always say, it's not a sexy project, right? And you're spending a lot of money on something that you're like, oh, but I think we have to make attempt to do something, and knowing that we're not going to solve all the problems all the time. The school district's a prime example. At prime let out time, it's challenging. It's challenging. So if we can solve, you know, the problem, you know, 80% of the time, it's better than not doing anything.
You got to do what you can do within
the kind of
budgetary reality that you have. I think this is a responsible way to address that. It probably won't solve all the problems all the time.
Nope, it won't.
We'll be able to come back in a year or two and say, you know, do we need more parking improvements, or do we need to put a traffic light in, or figure out a way to get more people to bike, you know,
exactly
up the back, you know,
right.
You mentioned the scapegoating. What is the maintenance on this going forward? Like,
good question.
So typically, you seal coat between 2 to 4 years, depending on the condition of the lot. It can really be impacted by the winters you have. So we have heavy ice winters, and you're putting a lot of salt down. You're slowing down. You're speeding up the degradation of your lot. So seal coating for something like the center parking lot and the east parking lot is going to probably run us $15,000 to $18,000 every 3 years, which is an operational capital expense that is fairly normal for something like this. I mean, we had the ELC parking lot seal coated last year, and it was about $6,000. So they're very manageable if you keep up on it and you don't let it go. And you don't let it go to the point that you have asphalt spalling and, you know, having areas that you're cutting out and repairing. So, and that's something that we contract out. We don't do that in-house.
Okay, so that's a really good question. So we've already been talking about that internally. We would start the day after camp ends, or the Monday after camp ends next summer, and we'd move the, like, we have an after camp to Watts, so we would have that whole, almost a whole month of August to do it. I don't know, you know, right, and then August tends to be a little slower here. We can enter people through the front. So we would do the majority of work during that 3 weeks that were kind of quiet before Labor Day. And knowing that we probably wouldn't finish them, so we would have another year of construction. But this, I don't think, would be as invasive as
well,
the back.
Well, I think people have done really, I've been surprised how easy the construction has gone so far on the lots that we have right now.
Well, I have to say our staff has been phenomenal, and GJK's staff has been phenomenal. They have all moved off-site. There's times that we come in the morning, and we call everybody down, and they move to a side street, and a bus goes around picking everybody up. I mean, that's happened a lot of times. For our major special events, we moved them to Lakefront Park. I mean, so everybody's been very, very accommodating during the process. But this, obviously, would be our main entrance, so we would obviously make sure that we make it a priority to get it open as quickly as possible.
As long as
which may mean that we say, hey, we want to pay for Saturday work because we want to get this done.
Just as long as it doesn't rain.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can arrange that for us.
So August tends to be a better month than that. So that's what would our plan be. Yeah.
So and then, how are you blades are leather that we can control. What did you say was the estimate of how long?
Oh, we don't know yet because we don't have the construction documents. Do you have
any
guess?
Really, we'll determine the scope.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be anywhere from 6 to 8 to 9 weeks, depending on what we have to do. I mean, I would imagine we would phase it so we wouldn't have the whole lot in front of the building closed. It wouldn't be like we put ticker tape up against the opening of Green Bay Road or anything like that. So I would think that when we were closed, we would try to get the hammerhead area done in the plaza and then fill in the rest afterwards. Typically, parking lot contractors are really good at working in open parking lots. So they've been, this is not nearly to the extent of what we've done in the east parking lot and back in the park share. We wouldn't be taking the asphalt all the way out. We wouldn't have to be doing undercuts or removing trees or anything of that magnitude.
Suppose it would be nice when, because the lot up by the east lot, mm-hmm. right, will be fixed.
Oh, that'd be done, yeah.
Right. So people, mm-hmm. theoretically, if you, at least you can drive back.
Go back there and then.
Walk on a brand new walking path.
Exactly. And we would move staff off site again, you know, just be another, until we get that done. So, good questions.
Any other comments? The comments that I have are that we need to make sure that we have appropriate wayfinding to get people back into our new lots.
Mm-hmm.
That would be important.
That's part of it.
I'm still on my high horse. I'm working with the village on solutions for traffic coming in and out along Green Bay Road, and maybe even providing extra spaces on Old Green Bay down the road. Trying to plant some seeds there.
Yep.
Okay.
We planted those to them also.
All right. So are we
okay.
done with that introduction?
Can you do the lights? Can you turn the lights on?
I got it.
Okay, I think I can read this in the semi-darkness or without. Okay. I will entertain a motion to approve Altamanu agreement for the schematic design development, construction documents, and construction management support for Phase D of the TACF Center Parking Master Plan for a total of $48,520 as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? It's so added. Okay, roll call please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Lennon?
Yes.
President Underdunk?
Yes.
We don't have to do sculptures. Did you want to mention something about solar lights? I'm sorry.
Yeah, one of the things that we've kind of been discussing with the east parking lot in the back is, based on the use that we are forecasting back there, the further lot, the new skate park lot.
Back here.
We may want to entertain the idea of putting up some solar lights in that area so it's not so dark. We currently have solar lights lighting the ELC playground area as well as the path along the back, so we have kind of a model for a functioning light that's already working here. So it's just something I wanted to bring up based on the fact that everyone's going to have the opportunity to walk out there tonight and kind of take a peek at that, and I'd like to get some feedback on what everybody's thinking about that later on. So
when you're leaving, can you kind of take a look back there and see what you think about that area? It's pretty dark, and we're going to actually ask our staff to park back there also a lot of the time, so that they'll take the furthest spot from the front door. So think about staff going out at night and, you know.
So are you talking about elevated light that are like shining down?
Yes.
Like on the whole platform?
Yes. Yeah. I'm not, don't think like supermarket. Not like, you know, you're at Home Depot or a car lot. So think ambient lighting. Once you head back there, you can kind of see what we already have and how that's working for us. I mean, the lighting here is pretty minimal for a parking lot at a community center, so something of that style.
It seems like a no-brainer. It seems like something we need to have for safety and security.
It gets pretty dark back there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there are established parking lot lighting standards.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's expensive to run electricity.
For us, the solar would be far more economical for the scope of what we're trying to do than tying in existing lights back there. They're not cost prohibitive. They're far more economical solar light fixtures. They have about the same lifespan as a regular light pole.
Okay.
And they work good.
And the bulbs last longer.
They do. Because they change brightness with the outside conditions.
Just being sustainable.
Yeah. They're brighter when it's dark, but not as bright when it's light.
All right.
Okay. Now, see, we can skip.
We can skip. Skip. You gave your directions.
So we're down to matters from the public again. Matters from the public.
Welcome.
Okay. Any other business then?
There is not for me, and we do not need to go to the executive session.
I just wanted to ask again.
Yes. Yes. Yep. I sent a letter and told her. Yep. Did not hear back from her. I just said we'll be doing it in the spring. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So, how about a motion to adjourn?
Wow, you guys are fine over there. Who was that? I give.
Yes.
Warren. Yes. All right. Okay. So it's.
We're out of here.